Yeah. Welcome to Friday. Hey, Game Audio Podcast. Anton, how are you doing, Matt?
Really good, really good.
Yeah.
It's been a crazy day, so...
Crazy day? It's only 7:30, Matt.
Well,
what could possibly happen so far?
The past 24 hours have been pretty crazy.
Okay, yeah. I was telling RJ this morning on the way in that you can't really measure GDC days in actual days. It's more like a multiplier of 5 or 10. It's like just time is different here, let's just say.
It sure is.
So, it's Friday. It's the last day of sessions. We've had a full week of just brain exploding game audio all over the place. Was that too visceral? Too graphic?
No.
Sorry.
Black sound effects.
Yeah, more sound effects. And I don't know, what did people see yesterday? Can anyone remember something that they saw that was cool?
Well, I'll kick it off. Mega Blast Talk, which was for me a highlight of GDC so far. It was really, really cool. You, Jay, and Guy, and
Jacqueline,
were doing. So it was really inspiring.
Yeah.
Did anybody else go see that talk?
Yeah, I went to see that talk, and for me too, that was probably my highlight so far of the. I was really interested about the way the MIDI was connected with Wise and integrated and merged the sound effects with the music. I did some game for Nintendo DS, and I remember doing these MIDI file connected when you do the your bank of sounds and connecting them, and there's a lot of possibility like changing the tempo, modulating and everything, and connecting things together that I felt I lost when I went to doing music for games that were only with music and WAV files. And I think combining the both is like the best of two worlds, and I find it was very inspiring, and the way how it sounds and everything blends in together, it was like, wow.
Yeah, I thought Jacqueline as well really did some great examples of how she works in WYs and what kind of sound she can make based on sounds that are already there or by using the tone generator and how it fit the aesthetic that we're going for. I was very impressed also by all three of you, or except for Guy, for two of you to do a live demo. That was, I think, a very risky move because tech always abandons you in times like that. So
yeah, well. The warning I would give everybody is make sure you have a very concise video backup. That we had videos ready to go in case something failed, and luckily it didn't, but better safe than sorry.
Yeah. But that was very interesting to get a little bit of an insight into the workflow.
The other interesting thing that if you didn't make it to that, RJ and Guy are demoing the Pego Blast audio system on the floor, on the expo floor at the Wise booth this afternoon.
Yeah, 1 to 3.
Definitely worth swinging by, having a peek under the hood. They pop it open and show you what's cooking. On that note, just this idea that a developer can do that, that they can bring their project, they can pop up a Unity and kind of dissect it in a deep dive, is the kind of thing in our industry, I think, which has become more commonplace, but once upon a time was like, locked behind a closed door, don't touch it, don't look at it, right? And I really, really value where our industry is at in regards to that knowledge share, so it's pretty cool. Thanks for doing that, RJ.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks.
Yeah.
Did anybody go to the Watch Dogs talk?
I was at that. It was really good. They talked a lot about music and the music systems and the mistakes they made along the way. It was a 5-year dev cycle, and they paid for the music really early on, and then found that it didn't. Like the game sort of shifted focus on them, and they ended up going with some in-house solutions, which is pretty rare. They talked a lot about keeping themes really simple, which I've noticed overall at GDC. That's been I've heard a lot of that in people's talks, and just how they were able to reuse music, reuse chord changes, and keep coming back to stuff, and how it could fit in. It was a good talk.
Cool. That I guess sort of connects with the Dice talk, where now of course I'm failing on his name.
Is it Martin?
Martin Luxton, right? Yeah. Martin Luxton did a talk about that. about the sort of the structure of the Frostbite engine and how they create sounds and that using templates.
Data so, inheritance.
Yeah, modularity. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that seems like a very good solution if you have a repetition in your assets a lot. So if you in Battlefield you have a lot of guns, and in Need for Speed you have a lot of cars.
Yep.
So I can imagine that if you have a templatized and modularized system, that it will really help speed things up. But I can also see how there would be a lot of work to do right if you're trying to figure out how your system should work while you're building a game. So I can imagine that they started from scratch with a few templates as well while doing it. So.
Right. Well, and I wonder though, in the global culture of EA and Frostbite, if that's not something that then can continue to get paid forward across different companies, across different titles, and having something smart like that where they can just easily pass between.
Yeah, I can imagine templates. Like the workflow from Battlefield 4 might have transported a little bit to the Battlefield Hardline team because they're on the other side of the globe. But it'd be harder to do that if you're working on a BioWare game and a Need for Speed game. I don't think there's too much commonality there.
True.
That it would really work. But of course the tool's always going to improve that. But good to get a little glimpse from Frostbite again. It's been a few years since they showed something, so.
Yeah, it's nice that they're talking about it still.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. Did anybody go to the Neuroscience of Game Audio talk? Because I missed that. I
actually really enjoyed this talk. I feel like very often when we'll go and hear a talk about game audio, it's all about the creative process, but they actually bring science into it, which makes me want to bring science into whatever that I do. I mean, they managed to create some really creepy sounds by associating the nails on the blackboard and how we can bring some more of that on scary things and different ways to make people sleep or anxious or happy or sad just by modulating certain frequencies, and that's really amazing. I mean, to kind of feel like Led Zeppelin when they were doing some stuff upside down with these messages that they wanted you to hear in a certain way. We have the power to do that, I guess, after hearing this talk, and I'd love to see maybe in a year or two people who went to this talk and applied some of the science to their video games. That would be cool.
I feel even worse about missing it now.
There was a really good example that they showed. It was like three beeps, just like beep, 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 and they put white noise in between, and you hear the connection. And you have the impression that it's a tone, and I feel like for things like HDR, when you duck things and everything, it's good. Because you know that you will still continue hearing it even though it's not being performed,
Yeah.
So it was really interesting to know how your ears listen and connect the dots together.
Yeah, it's interesting because all this research has been sort of available to R&D departments, big R&D departments at various studios, and they develop algorithms for reverbs or for all kinds of psychoacoustical tricks. But the knowledge really just hasn't really crossed over yet to the people that are in the creative field yet. Sort of, it's sort of stuck in the halfway point, like the neuroscientists do something and then they make a tool with it or something, and then maybe you can use that tool, but you don't really understand what's going on there. I mean, MP3, for example, is kind of an example of that, like how you can bin data out and you still don't hear it. Sort of like a trick that you can produce the data like that. So looking forward to seeing what will happen when we cross over.
Maybe something our friends at Audio Kinetic could implement an induced sleep or induced fear plugin in mind. Just reroute whatever signal you have to that processing thing and people are immediately scared.
Don't forget, we need the tools, you can make your own.
Man, one of my favorite talks yesterday was Rob Bridget's talk about adaptive loudness. That was really cool. Did someone else see the talk?
Yeah.
So does anyone else want to comment on it at all?
I mean, he had some really, really cool ideas that I don't know of anybody else doing, like using the microphone to actually measure the ambient volume so that they can kind of adjust the dynamic range of their mix.
Yeah, using compression, yeah.
It was really, really cool. I mean, he was very upfront about kind of the limitations of the current implementation, right? And but I think it's awesome that he's actually, he and his team are starting the work. I mean, I think there's a lot to do, but I do think it's really, really important, and it's nice to see that they're, like, at least, you know, doing a first draft and sharing it out. So I think it's something, we work on mobile games, and I really want to try and, like, take note from them.
Yeah, Rob is definitely the, with that talk, the front runner in this kind of way of thinking about how do we both maximize the experience for the user based on their environment, based on their listening environment, but also how do we keep things safe and within a standard that can help protect our ears, the ears of our children. It made me feel super lazy because he's done so much good work, and I can't wait to apply a bunch of it.
There's one thing really cool that came out of this talk, and is when he said that he feels that this loudness towards the environment should be an OS problem and not a video game designer problem. And I completely agree, and the one thing that makes me agree the most with this is that if you create an app and you have your own tool using your phones or your mobile device as a microphone, you have to ask permission. And I'm always freaked out when an app says, I want to use your microphone, and I want to use your camera. I would say no. So we can't do this. I mean, I don't think this could be a really popular feature for adult, games that are aimed at adults and, you know, most people. But if the OS did it, it would just be like standard and always, and it would solve so much of a problem.
Well, it also helped a lot with transitioning back and forth between apps. You know, he brought up, like, he can do all of this work and make something, like, really standardized and have a great experience for somebody, and then they go and they play, you know, some other app, you know, that hasn't done it, and, you know, all that work that he's trying to do, the listener is kind of shot.
He was giving the example that the light of the screen, you know, it adapts. If you're in a dark environment or light environment, that should be just the equivalent for the audio.
So yeah, actually it's just a question, but about mixing and loudness standards for mixing games, is there already like a setup standard for the audio community? And if yes, where can we find those resources?
Right.
You can start by looking up, for example, the paper by the ASWG, which is Sony Standards Group, which set loudness standards for the Vita handheld, and also for consoles and for traders and things like that. So there is sort of a thing, and that went on to the IESD part of GANG, and it's sort of like, that's sort of the overseeing standard now. But pretty much just follow where broadcast is going with this one. Especially on an iPhone, it's, I think, even more so a broadcasting issue rather than a games issue, because new people will be watching YouTube videos there and on the web and stuff. So I think, I don't know which one's going to come first, but if it's PC, it would be my choice, to be honest, because that's where I get the most suddenly speaker freak out moments, where some ad still pops up to this day, and sort of I have to run a limiter on my PC for sound card. I love to get rid of it. So.
Yeah, so it starts with the broadcast standard, and then the work that that Sony did, which was adopted and ratified across all the other major publishers, Microsoft.
I would say the AES did.
Started with the AES, and Gary then moved that into Sony, which was then adopted to IESD and kind of ratified across multiple studios. Mm-hmm. So that's the first place to start for console and mobile with regards to the Vita. There's more work to be done defining that for mobile devices kind of across the spectrum. So it'll be good to keep following that. And I think if anything, what it is it's a target for us to shoot for, right? It's a place for us to start to tune into, you know, what's appropriate.
Yeah. I would like it though if there was a bit more research behind it. Because Rob was doing was trying to make sure it doesn't get too loud. But I think in the science community there should be sort of some more information about what is too loud, especially for children. And also not just on a gain rate, but also in frequency spectrum.
Yeah.
Because the little I do know about hearing damage is not so much volume, but it's more so much irregularity of the sound itself. So for example, if you have a pulse wave with a very short pulse and you play that very loud, it's much more dangerous than a sine wave. So, in that way, perhaps we could build much smarter tools as well to protect people's hearings by doing frequency domain stuff, and that would also then not alter perception so much. It could still feel very loud and very bassy, because bass frequencies really don't hurt your ears too. So, it could be the best of both worlds. But one thing I really like that he did, I think was very smart, is not tie the microphone setting somewhat directly to any parameter, but he sort of pinned it. So he said, if it falls into a certain loudness for a certain length of time, we use these settings, instead of driving directly any parameter in the compressor with it, because it would probably be a lot more easy to work with like that.
Yeah. It's very smooth. Very smooth. Anyone see the How to Give Your Game an Audio Style Talk that Joanna Orlinda gave? Yeah. It was fantastic.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
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 I had high hopes for it and she blew them away. It was amazing.
Yeah.
She, like I said yesterday, I think, talking about the creative process of sound design without getting into the nitty-gritty of the compression rate of MP3s is sometimes a bit difficult. Like when you get into implementation, we sometimes have trouble steering the path of like what makes a game sound interesting, and we get into the technical whatever limitations or tools whatever. And she managed to make something about the creative process that was very very easy to understand without being fluffy or airy. You know, very substantial. Yeah,
and her approach as far as developing a style guide, having a vocabulary and an audio vocabulary she can use to communicate with the team, and then doing Blue Sky pre-production, which I know is something that Guy does at PopCap, where he'll take out of context linear video for the game and score it as if it were the real thing, towards an idea of establishing a style. Do you want to talk more about that, Guy?
Out of anything technical, right? We all have traditional dogs are so in our veins that we can put something there and not worry about how it's going to be implemented. But the score of new sound design for this, and then reverse engineer it and say, oh, now right? How do I pull this off in game, right? So it's really just to take the out of context, work only in the creative zone, and then to puzzle it together after the fact.
I think that's almost like, for me it's like, oh no, I'm not going to do that. It's like almost a calling card now to say the tools need to get much better, you can steal them. Because what if you could get rid of that in the game as well?
True, in fact, if there's a way to do it in game, but you can see the scene start to burst between, obviously innuendo and lies, and I think that's going to only improve. It'll be a quicker cycle to just dump that in. But I still like the idea of not worrying about interactivity as well as much. Does anyone else work this way at all?
I was curious as to what sort of workflows you have once you're in the DAW and you score that way.
Yeah.
Thinking about it then interactively, what do you do to prototype it before it goes into the game? I've been using Ableton.
Yeah, Ableton's great tool for that. I've done that, it works great. I mean, even in Performer, I used to use chunks. There's things you can do. But I think if more gets closer to Wise, I'm going to dump things into Wise super quick.
Sure.
Like, I'll be able to just drag a lot down, boom, and try stuff out. So I'm really looking forward to that. But what I do have done is just kind of know what size the chunks need to be, whether it's sounds or music, and quickly get those.
So what I'd like to do is just get rid of the image completely and just make a little, I think I've seen people do this as well, just if I'm sort of in that space, just not even look at anything and just make it feel like what I want it to feel like. And because as soon as I see any moving image, then I just try to score or just directly to it, and it becomes like, then I become a movie sound designer, and that mindset makes me very uncreative for some reason.
Yeah.
And once I'm freed of all of that, then it sort of, then it works again. So
there were some great examples of exactly that in the Sunset Overdrive talk, where they highlighted the different aesthetics for the different kinds of movement systems, and you know, just really, really tried to set the tone and to communicate. Again, it comes back to this: once we have the vision, once we've drilled into a creative aesthetic, how do we communicate that with the team? I mean, do we sit in a room and try to explain it using words? And I think the answer is that, you know, an example with audio will speak louder than any vernacular we might be able to throw around a conference room. So the value of that to get everyone on board and really to also start the conversation of what it's going to sound like.
But at the same time, I really liked her concept of establishing that audio language to describe like what the palette of the project is going to be, as a way not only to communicate like with the greater team what the sounds were, you know, what the palette of the game was going to sound like, but also as a way to kind of like keep herself in check from a design standpoint, you know, give yourself some, a little bit of constraints to fall into. You know, she used the elements as an example so that the design team could come up to her and say, oh, this sound isn't perfect, and instead of just saying, you know, it's not perfect, they can say, like, it's not fiery enough, or it's not, you know, it's not earthy enough, and they've got a dialogue that she can actually react to.
Yeah, it seemed like her way to get the dev team to buy in initially was actually quite visual at the very beginning.
I'll tell you what, that's probably, I didn't start working this way for that reason, but it's why I'm doing it more often, because you have this thing you can present your entire vision, audio vision, to kickle to and get by off of, that is totally polished and in your control, not half-baked in a game that isn't quite ready yet. So it's really powerful that way.
Well, when the game team gets behind it, and they're showing it at the stand-up, they're showing it at the meeting, it's being used as a way to, you know, give people an update on the state of the game in a larger studio. It just helps to, I think, fuel the development juices that are happening in a way where audio then becomes part of the conversation, which is something I think audio is always trying to be better at and be earlier into, is that creative conversation in the pre-production and establishment phase, so that people are thinking about audio. And I think it's easier to have concept art on the wall, walk by it on the way to the coffee machine, have an accidental conversation about it, because we all have to, for the most part, we're all eyes wide open walking around the hallway. But audio, it's a little harder. It's not like we're going to force Muzak through the speakers in the ceiling and, you know, expect people to listen.
So what we did at Guerrilla is we have sort of a place where somebody's playing the game, lots of, but there's a mirrored screen in the hallway where people are walking through, and there you can pick up headphones and you can listen in, so in publicly, so you can see like people watching a game but also listening to it. And the other thing that we do is we have weeklies, so every week we gather all everybody's material and sort of put it on the forum, and everyone can watch what's going on.
That's great.
So it also gives the designers a bit of time to talk about prototypes and stuff.
Sure. So weeklies is kind of like, is a kind of dailies.
Yeah.
Like in the film analogy, mm-hmm. where, okay, this is what we're doing, and let's look at your animations, and okay, this is where you need to tweak it. And,
yeah.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah. I wonder if we should get some outside perspective. We got one of our PopCap engineer friends, Scott Rankin, over there, who... he's not an audio dude, but he helps us out a lot.
He's an honorary audio dude.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Scott, is there anything that you find is like makes communicating with an audio team useful or unuseful? I mean, I know more technically on your side, but...
No, I think it's hugely valuable. Yeah. And in fact, to your earlier point, I really think you should broadcast me as an audio. Like, so many times at our studio, it's headphones on, eyes, like... vision to the computer, and the hearing the audio soundtrack throughout the day would be fantastic.
Yeah, imagine me walking the halls of PopCap now with a ghetto blaster on my shoulder, just kicking out the soundtrack and rocking it.
I think maybe sometimes we feel like imposing our audio on the greater team might be, you know, more of a disturbance, but maybe it wouldn't bother them as much as we think, and it might be kind of helpful.
Choice places. Yeah. I think it's another layer that's necessary in every game, and all of those layers interweaving are what bring the experience to the next level.
Yeah, I think this would be a great idea actually. Like, imagine, you know, have a horror game. Yeah. And you have this kind of suddenly the lights dim and the creepy sounds. Just like they would remember that fear and they could go back to work after.
Use some very directional speakers. You won't bother that many people. If you stand just the right place.
Yeah. A couple of years ago at Brilliant, we got these new genetic subwoofers, huge motherfuckers, and they shipped them in these big ass crates. So like the archetypical, the typical game crate. And there were so three of them stacked in the hole, and the plan we had that we didn't follow through. We figured, why don't we put a speaker inside of it, and then just have a PD patch running inside of it that when it detects some kind of person walking by or something, we'll do something random.
Like the fair man too much gold.
That's exactly what we want to do. But I think what we did do is somebody put a little speaker in the trees next to my, so what I have like two big plants next to my studio, because my studio door is right behind the coffee machine. And so if I open my door and somebody's walking by, I could like pretty much knock them out, because I can't see them coming, and like so, and they think that they can just walk by there. So we put two plants there, but the day that they showed up, they thought I was like trying to make a forest or something. So somebody put a recorder in there and that played back monkey sounds.
This whole discussion is actually really relevant for us. I work with smaller games, and you know, smaller teams, and they're not used to have some people on the team. So I always want to tell people like this to get someone in early. They don't have to be full time, but just have someone to kind of throw sounds with, throw ideas with, and no sound audio. It's so valuable early in the process, and you notice games that haven't done that, and there's a huge difference between those and those that have. You know, so I always like, in Norway there's like four people working with games or game audio, and two of those work at Funcom as Locked. So you know, I go around trying like this and get students, get people, get anyone, man, anyone that's never touched like a microphone to check out your game, because it's so valuable, man.
Yeah. So, Bonnie and I were on the judging committee for the Independent Game Festival this year, and what's really interesting is you can clearly tell who has been thinking about audio and who hasn't. And there, this is some of the things, I guess, preaching to the choir here, we all know this, right? But these are the things that really separate a finished, polished experience from a game that you can tell has got cracks in the pavement. What was your experience judging that this year?
I guess, for one, I'm really glad that Ephemerid won the Best Audio Design Award. Holy cow, like, Flying Dragonfly, rock opera, interactive rock band experience in, 40 minutes? It's all based on a record album? Like, amazing. They took the audio design and they went back. So that was just plain fun and beautiful. And there was also really some good runner-ups. Like, has anyone played Vanishing Beneath the
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
So that can be a really long game if you get lost, but it's actually a beautiful game to get lost in. And they really did a really excellent job of like isolation versus music cues whenever things would get creepy. And I thought how they treated the whole clue system whenever you were tracking ghosts. It was, I don't know, it's something about they used isolation and overpopulation of senses and haunting your brain. I don't know. It was a joy to judge.
Well, and so those are the ones that floated to the top, where it was clear that they had made that extra effort. How many did you weed through on the way to that list? Because honestly,
I was surprised how many entries people had tagged as please consider for audio award that I had to take my headphones off. There was some really canned soundtracks. Some level balancing was just not existent. It was very clear who had taken the time to probably let their friend or someone else, you know, heavily analyze stuff and who just threw it in at the last minute. There was a lot of peaking issues, like a lot of loudness issues. I had a lot of variable, God knows what. And I will say one big thing I noticed in the games I tried, horrible recorded dialogue completely ruined an experience.
just audio atrocities.
I had everything
just
from
some dialogue.
Bad acting to people like clapping in the middle of a take that obviously never got edited. It was just, you know, but it really, everyone else who put the effort in really rose to the top. It wasn't hard to narrow down my decisions.
Yeah, I agree. Man, you could tell in like 30 seconds drop into a world and the footsteps are terrible and you're like...
Or there's only two footsteps.
Yeah, this is not going to go well. Right. So...
Cool. So, looking forward to tomorrow. Oh,
FX.
I just wanted you to go back a little bit and add something about, you know, organizing a your DAW session for scoring interactively. I use Cubase, and Cubase has this wonderful feature called the arranger track. So I can really, like, create, compose segment by segment, you know, not in a linear way, inside the DAW, and then create different structures to test different possibilities inside the DAO. So since the Steinberg guys are here right now at GDC, I went to talk to them and I said, okay, it would be nice if the structure could be randomized inside Cubase. So, you know, we could really like test stuff the same way that it's going to sound in Wise. And they were super excited about it. I mean, they never thought about it. So,
well, I know that they thought about it. So yeah, they tricked you them because that's exactly what I've been talking to them about as well. It's good you're missing.
Yeah.
And so, but that's also what I mentioned yesterday about pushing them towards a game dog. That's exactly the first thing that they should do.
Yeah. Like since now those guys seem to be listening, at least some of them, to what the game audio community wants. It's our job to try to push them to implement some more tools inside DAOs that will allow us to test stuff more easily.
So right, triggering an event from Nuendo, right?
Yes.
Why can't we trigger an event in Wise from the DAO, right?
Yeah,
I have a sound, it's already part of my project, it maybe doesn't live in the same Nuendo project, but I need to add it contextually so that I can understand the chunk of content I'm working on.
Or the other way around. You trigger something in WYs that triggers the current version in Nuendo.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
You might not even have it imported yet, but it just triggers it on the timeline in Nuendo.
Yeah.
Or you add a new event in Nuendo and say, just add this event to the WY for it. Yeah. That's what I'm saying, you know, this could go boom.
Yeah.
Really quickly.
What's really cool is I talked to the Steinberg engineers who were there. Apparently the guys at WYs had, you were saying that you had no idea that they were going to do this.
We started talking with them mid last year, and we kind of had a plan of wouldn't it be nice if.
Sure.
And then not really that long ago, they contacted us and said, hey, can we show this at your booth? And we're like, show what? And then that basically started a path of, let's actually check this out, work with them more closely to make it better. And we already know just from not only the excitement, because there's a very vague announcement for GDC, right? It's a Nuendo 7 integration with WISE. People went, I don't know how far this is going to go, but let my imagination start going crazy. I started reading all of this hype, tweeting about it.
There's so much hype about it.
It definitely didn't hurt that Steinberg has like 100,000 Facebook people in their page. Like, yes, please talk about us on your Facebook page, because we don't have 100,000 people on our page. I don't even know if we have a pitch. But yeah, like, there's a lot of people saying, this is cool, and here's where we would love to see it go, and you guys get to have this discussion too, and I don't know where the best place would be to kind of have the repository of
feature requests,
feature requests, whether it's with us, whether it's with Steinberg, whether it's sitting on a forum somewhere that we just say, everybody look at this, pay attention.
Well, I think maybe we can start with the WISE QA section.
That is a possibility. It is also a page that none of you probably ever go to.
Hey!
I think you
That was last year. This year, I've used it a ton.
I want to add to this that, you know, at the moment it's Steinberg and WISE. But I know Steinberg, they're not into close relationships like that. You know, this is not how they work. Remember the VST standard. They are the ones that made this industry for audio engineers open. And I'm sure that the same will apply to this.
Right.
So great for WISE, it will be great for everybody. And you know, I think to really push this forward, it's got to be tied into no particular ecosystem, and everybody's workflow is going to be improved in however you want it to be improved.
Absolutely. So. I mean, their Game Audio Connect box right now it talks with us. Yeah. There's really nothing stopping them from working with the Reaper guys or the Epimod guys or the Ableton guys or whatever. Or I guess they wouldn't work with the Ableton guys. just to get, you know, Fabric, the Unity directly, the Unity, whatever they think would work. But there's work on both sides. So
yeah, of course.
The Unity guys said, we don't really see a value in it. It wouldn't happen unless someone wrote a plugin for Unity that did it, you know. So there is definitely work on both sides of that equation.
Yeah, so I don't know exactly how they would handle it, but I imagine them to be releasing an SDK at some point that whether or not it works like the SKI or the VST plugin SDK you assign something for, and just do it yourself. So, you know, if whether or not some manufacturer will do it, this is game development, you know, we've got coders, so even on the smallest team, you got a coder there, so.
On the other side of things will be, it's interesting to see if somebody does it for Reaper with the SWS extensions, right? Like from
Nuendo into Reaper.
No, from Reaper into Wise. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, I was talking to a CTO about that, saying, oh, are we talking with these guys? And they say, we probably don't have to, because the way they have their technology architected, the community can do everything that they're already talking about on their forums. They had a very long thread apparently about, wouldn't it be cool if the Nuendo integration did this and that and the other thing. They basically spec'd out what they can do in Reaper.
Cool.
Okay, so let's move on to today. It's Friday. We got a whole day of talks. It's tough, like we said yesterday, deciding what to go to. You have so many choices, and they're stacked on top of each other. And so I want to just take a moment and say thank you all for coming and sharing yesterday's sessions. I feel like I was able to attend them in spirit through your sharing and contributions. So thank you for that.
What about Little Big Planet 3?
You know, Winifred Phillips always gives a great presentation. I expect nothing but the highest quality. Taking your score to Vertical Extremes. Okay.
So 150 tracks, what are we talking about?
Oh yeah, at runtime.
Also, she's doing her book signing at 12:30 today as well. So if you want to meet her, she has an excellent book. I have read it, and I've been recommending it to every composer at GDC who wants to know more about game audio, because it's such an excellently written book. It's as well written as her talks are good.
Right? Yep. She's got great anecdotal evidence on her entry into the industry, and so it's not just strictly a music book, but also just somewhat template for stepping into game audio and kind of understanding music and its place in the pipeline and in the process. So I agree, great book. Audio tips for public betas, alphas and early access with Matthew Martinson. Of course, a regular game audio podcast attendee.
Yep. And he's got his own podcast as well.
Beards, Cats, and Game Audio with Gord. Yeah. Yep. That'll be cool. Who's going to that one? Yeah. All right. So that'll be sweet.
Of course, fellow Sony compadre Mike Niederkiel and Dave Collins are doing a talk about Hohokam. And that's probably going to be very interesting because they work together with Ghostly Records on that project, and it was a very interesting collaboration, I think. They had some custom stuff, they had some licensed stuff, and it was sort of not the kind of game where you would expect it immediately to have that kind of a deal, but it sort of was interesting, and I think Mike did some really cool things with the sound there as well, so looking forward to that.
Sunset Overdrive again with a open world game audio, this one by the Insomniac folks. So that'll be cool. Interested to see what they got to say about it.
Isaac
Town Hall. This is another chance for you to hear what's happening behind the scenes in one of our game audio organizations working to establish standards and foster, you know, discussions of a more technical nature usually, but definitely a place to go and hear about what's happening, but also a place where if you feel like you have something to say, a voice or a passion that you're looking for support or some kind of you're looking to find collaborators towards an end, this is a great place to stand up, put it out there to the world, and see what the interest is.
Yep. In music games, of course, there's the,
Where does the game end and the instrument begin?
I like the title.
I like it too. Do you remember the podcast we did with Samantha Coleman from Centris and Shahan Lim from Soundshakes?
Yeah.
And, games as an instrument, right? In a sense, a game is just a giant keyboard pushing a bunch of magic buttons towards this sampler that we call the audio engine, right? And so, now that games have kind of moved away from, games to experiences or toys, we've seen a lot of these kind of hybrid situations. So, yeah, I think that sounds like a great bet.
Yeah.
Who's going to that one? Yeah, okay, okay.
What time is that one?
Same time as the Sunset Overdrive talk.
1:30.
Okay. Yeah. Those two close off the audio track this year.
Is that true?
Yeah, that's it.
That is true. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So where's the party after?
I'm just doing sort of like a little informal meetup for anybody that wants to drop by at Show Dogs between 5 and 7. And there's a possibility of alcohol there, which is kind of nice. So the idea is to just basically sit down and relax and just, maybe even not talk. I don't know. But I mean, like, it's a cool little spot. So it's basically like you just head up to Market Street. It's on the corner there.
Yeah.
At Golden Gate Market. So.
Yeah, so roll out to that for sure. And Leonard, while you're at it, would you give us an update of the School of Game Audio? It'd be great to hear what has been going on over the past couple of years since you started that up.
Yeah, so basically, I've worked in the industry since like 94, so I've been doing it for a while. And just in the last 2 years, I started the School of Video Game Audio and basically had like a few hundred people come through from 35 different countries. So basically, try and help people out, and it's a lot of mentorship. So, but at the same time, there's like, I basically book people in for 2 months at a time, or if you want to come around longer than that. And then, training people in WISE, FMOD Studio, Unity with a bit of Fabric, so we're gonna support Fabric even more, and then just launched a Pure Data course as well. So,
wow,
yeah. Awesome.
Awesome. Yeah, so basically, the hangout session, you can sort of pick my brain about that. And like, I'm not like attending GDC this time around. I'm just sort of hanging out. I did a couple talks yesterday, one at Stanford at Karma, which was awesome.
Nice.
If you ever have the chance to go down to Karma, it's incredible. It's mind-blowing. And then I also gave another talk at the California College of Art as well. So, I just sort of... I'm just hanging out and stuff. So just come out, whatever at 5 to Show Dogs if you got enough energy, or if you're flying home, that's fine. But San Francisco's gorgeous, so it's just sort of like a chill time to, sort of continue the, it's like the chill out room.
Perfect.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, there's one thing we didn't talk about yet.
What is it?
The Gang Awards.
Okay. Who went to the Gang Awards last night? Okay. Interested in any feedback? How did you all like it? It was a celebration, let's say. It was the first Gang Awards that finished on time. Which you can't say that about the Oscars, the Grammys. Congrats to Alexander and Brian Schmidt for pulling that trick off. I don't know how that happened. Again, great opportunity to recognize the people in our industry and the hard work they've done. My biggest takeaway, I guess, I can't really remember any of the award recipients. No, that's not true. But
one of them.
Every award recipient came on stage with such gratitude, and almost all of them immediately returned that thanks to the people in the audience and the people in our industry. And that feedback loop of love, emotion, respect, and just embracing the community and what we do is, I think, my biggest takeaway. That's my favorite thing from the Gang Awards.
The quote that I liked the best from the whole night was from the Lifetime Achievement Award winner, Batman, who said something along the lines of, "A lifetime is short, and a Lifetime Achievement Award speech should be even shorter."
Yeah.
He was right on point.
Absolutely.
Amazing job.
Yep. Inspirational talk from him. You know, over the last couple of years, especially, the awards have done a great job punctuating the awards ceremony with the recognition of very special contributors to our industry.
Yeah.
And I think there's definitely something special to that. Brandon Cole, of course.
Yeah.
And so. Definitely. I have to say, best mix of the year went to Alien Isolation.
Yeah.
That was cool.
I was actually going to say a little thing about the Alien talk. Because there were two Alien talks this year. One at the design track.
Yeah.
And one at the audio track. And it was interesting that, I know most of the audio parts, but at the design track one, he actually mentioned audio quite specifically quite a few times.
Nice.
As a major key component. And I can imagine, especially in a horror game like that, that it is critical.
Yeah.
But it was good to see that they realized it quite early on in their prototyping stage and they developed it out quite well. And that's probably why they got to do the things that they got to do, so.
Yeah, so audio of the year went to Call of Duty. Pohokam won for best indie soundtrack.
Yeah, those guys were. It was. They were really surprised when they kept getting the awards because they were. I was sitting right in front of them and I just kept hearing, "What? Really? Are you kidding?" coming from those guys, which hopefully that means that they were working so hard that they didn't even know how good they were doing, which is always a glad thing to know that you've done such great work that everybody's willing to say, "Hey, here you go. You've done. You've been recognized by everybody else as being." I just thought it was kind of interesting how those guys were really humble about it and very excited about it too.
Yeah, absolutely. Their whole team, you know, it's a big team, right? Had to be at least 6-7 people up on stage, and of course, it takes a team that big to pull off a game that big, right? And I think that goes even further with an IP like Call of Duty, which extends across, I think it's 4 different studios, Infinity Ward, Sledgehammer, Raven, and what's the other one?
Treyarch?
Yes. So, I think that's a Herculean task to pull the threads together from all those things, and it was a well-deserved accomplishment. Again, the Gang Awards, voted on by members of Gang, and you know, nominated by anyone. Anyone can nominate a game for a Gang Award. And
I'm on board the Top Score podcast.
That was awesome.
The Best Community Award, whatever it's called.
So Emily Reese of Top Score podcast, actually Minneapolis represent, right? I knew her back in Minneapolis. She works at NPR, and she was just passionate about video game soundtracks, and in the classical music context, and certainly with some of the advocacy that Video Games Live does to bring orchestral to a new audience, I think very similarly she has found a perfect opportunity and outlet to be able to bring the work done in the game music community to a wider audience, and the work she's done is incredible.
And also not just overnight, she's been doing it for a long, long time and always at a very, very high quality, so well deserved.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah. All right, well, I'm ready for a day. I mean,
I'm ready.
Yep.
Bring it.
Okay.
Cool. Good. Well, thanks again for everyone. Appreciate you coming.
Thank you guys.